Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
I'm John Pastor with Professor Gary Bass. His new book is Judgment at Tokyo, World War II on Trial and the Making of Modern Asia. Douglas MacArthur, 5-star general, the American Occupation Force, in place in September, October, November, December of 1945. What is to be done? Democratization, Christianization, a rebuilding of the Japanese society. It's not only in tatters, it's in ashes. MacArthur rides in from the airport when he first lands in August of 45, and he rides past what the professor reports is 22 miles of ruins, charred ruins. Curtis LeMay has burned Tokyo, burned Japan. There's nothing there. They're beginning again. The Hiroshima and Nagasaki war of destruction resembles what the rest of Japan looked like. Now we come to the fact that there are men who are waiting for their own fate. And it's important to mention, as the professor does, that the Army and the Navy and the ministry started burning papers immediately upon the day of surrender, immediately burning what is estimated to be 70% of the documents about the Nanjing massacres. So the trial ahead is going to struggle to recover information. We need to go now to the arrest of Tojo Hideki, a very vivid military man who became prime minister. And there's a photograph in the professor's book of Tojo bowing to the emperor. You can understand the formality of his relationship to the Meiji emperor. Tojo tries to kill himself. Do we believe it, Professor? Because he does a very bad job of it, and this is a very precise man.
He's very good at killing a lot of people. He's not very good at killing himself. There's a lot of mockery with him, against him within Japan. This is a period where the Japanese public is turning against him. But yes, on September 11th, American troops show up at his house to arrest him. He knows what they're there for. He hears that the troops are outside, and he blows a hole through his chest. He says that he chose to shoot himself in the chest rather than shoot himself in the head because he wanted people to be able to determine afterwards that this really was the corpse of Tojo, the army minister and prime minister whose cabinet made the decision to attack the United States, the British Empire, the Dutch Empire. So he does, I do think it's a pretty sincere suicide attempt. It's not a very competent suicide attempt, but he did shoot himself in the chest.
Other arrests go forward. The head of the Kampatai, that is the brutal state security, the man who was foreign minister during the Doolittle raid. And there are important arrests here, but we need to break them down into groups because this is the way we're going to think about them in a trial. Class A, Class B, Class C. What was a Class A crime as they proposed in these arrests, Professor?
So generally when people think of Class A, you just think major war criminal. But what it actually means is those accused of aggressive war. So because the decision to launch aggressive war, to invade China, to grab Indochina, to attack the United States at Pearl Harbor, those are top level decisions. The decision, Class A war criminals are the most senior people, and that include Tojo. They go after everyone who is in his cabinet at the time of Pearl Harbor, including a man named Togo Shigenori, who was actually the foremost voice within the Japanese government arguing against attacking Pearl Harbor. But he is nevertheless sort of rounded in with the cabinet. And the focus is on the military, especially the army. The Japanese army, even more so than the Navy, is extremely bellicose. There are also civilian ideologues, prime ministers, foreign ministers in there. And it's a, as well as a bunch of generals, including General Matsui Iwane, who was commanding troops at the time of the Nanjing Massacre in 1937, 1938.
There's one man who becomes a fascination for the time now and now looking back, learning about him from you, Kido Kochi, Marquis Kido. He was someone who had access to the emperor almost every day, I believe. Isn't that correct? And he kept a diary.
Yes. So he is a extremely posh, from a very fancy family. He is himself a lord who is the Lord Keeper of the Privy Seal, which means he is the top political advisor to the Emperor of Japan. And although the emperor is never charged, his right-hand man is. And Kido is ultimately convicted. He is blamed for, among other things, the decision to make Tojo Hideki prime minister right before Pearl Harbor, which puts in power this very, very hawkish guy who clearly wanted to strike against the United States at the first opportunity. And Kido is ultimately given a life sentence in jail. He doesn't serve out the full life sentence. But for anyone who wonders, you know, what might have happened, what might the 11 judges of the Tokyo trial have done if confronted with the emperor in front of them, then you can look at what was done to his number one guy, Marquis Kido.
The diary itself, how soon after the war did the people of Japan have access to that diary? Did they ever, Professor? Do they today?
They do today. It's easy to buy today. It's very large. There's sort of shorter editions. But the Americans don't know. Nobody is aware of it until when Kido is arrested. He shows up and says, I have something you guys might actually be interested in, which is, it turns out, I've kept a pretty fastidious diary of all sorts of conversations at the highest levels of the Japanese government. And this becomes the key to the prosecution's evidence. It's a blueprint to how Japan was making its decisions in this era. It's incomplete in some way because Kido has a tendency to leave out his own opinions. I think he knows that that's, you know, a smart move when thinking about posterity. But it does tell you a lot about how decisions were being made. And if you read it as a chronicle of what exactly the emperor was doing, it's often very damning.
Yes. When I discovered that diary, I thought there is the document they needed to burn right there. Because that diary has plenty of information that reintroduces the question of the emperor's complicity. Now, when we talked about the execution that MacArthur did right away against two generals, we need to note, because this becomes almost like a foreshadowing of what's ahead of us, that the Supreme Court got involved and said at some point, the U.S. Supreme Court, we have no jurisdiction over this. And that kept it away from the American courtroom. Looking back at that material at the time, Professor, was that determinative based on the information that MacArthur gave them from their understanding of the Nuremberg trials that were going on, a tribunal that was going on at the same time? I found Justice Stone in particular convincing, but what was their information about not having authority over a U.S. military court?
Basically, they're looking for the most minimal way to get around this problem, that the defense lawyers for General Yamashita have taken the case all the way up to the court. And this is the same court that handed down, more or less, the same court that handed down Korematsu, that is, you know, upheld Japanese internment. And there are two dissenters who are furious and said that this is a violation of the Fifth Amendment. You can't have any jurisdiction to punish this guy, that it is essentially saying that enemy belligerents have no constitutional rights. But the court itself, the majority says, this is a properly constituted court. And the judiciary is going to be very restrained about getting involved in military affairs. Congress lent its authority to create military tribunals to the U.S. Army. The U.S. Army set up this court in Manila, and the U.S. federal courts are not going to get involved in this. So the military could review it, but the U.S. Supreme Court wants no part of it.
The swift justice is to be delayed because what's about to happen is an international court convened. I want to make note, however, we've gone over what are the war crimes. What are the war crimes? The crime of aggressive warfare is Class A. That would be Pearl Harbor, the attack on Manchuria. I'm not sure about that, but I think the attack at the Marco Polo Bridge in 1937 is certainly aggressive warfare. The attack on Singapore, all of that. Nanjing stands out, however. Unlike all the other crimes, Nanjing is a combination of aggressive warfare and what Class B, is that what are conventional war crimes? The mass murders, the mass rapes. And General Matsui Iwani, my notes are scattered here. Forgive me.
That's him.
Yes. However, there's a royal member, a member of the royal family involved in this. I don't have his name right in front of me. And they decide not to prosecute him. Is that correct?
That's correct. Because they are afraid of implicating the royal house. So there are, as you mentioned, by the way, I think the invasion of Manchuria, which is northeastern China, that does count as aggression, as Class A. And the other, you know, the other classes are Class B, which is just conventional war crimes, and Class C, which is crimes against humanity, which the judges kind of roll together. And as you say, at Nanjing, you have acts of, you know, conventional war crimes, of killing people who are civilians. That is a violation. And it's the blame for that falls most heavily on General Matsui Iwane, but there's also an uncle of the emperor, Princess Asaka Yasuhiko, who's a lieutenant general who was commanding Japanese troops in the conquest of Nanjing, and he's never tried.
We're now coming to the decision to put together a court, an international court. It's called the International Military Tribunal for the Far East. It's established inside the former Imperial Army headquarters near downtown Tokyo at the time. It's an elaborate stage set. It looks like a Hollywood stage set. There are photographs everywhere of it. And the choice is nine sovereign powers that participate. The same, I think this is true, Gary, the same that signed on Missouri. Is that how they choose
Correct.
The list?
It's the same. Yes, same nine.
And those nine states are now about to convene the trial. This is now going to be 1946. And so when we come back, the judges themselves are critical to understand how this story is unending. It's here with us in the 21st century. The book is Judgment at Tokyo. Gary Bass is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.